lemons equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2FM.
Yes, a big thank you to Roz and Emma for teeing us up in perfect fashion for the weekend. It is Friday the 1st of July. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, Shane McGrath and Mick Carton set us up for a massive weekend of hurling as some of the game's greats take to Croke Park, intent on reaching the All-Ireland Final.
To describe for people who can't see it, it's a sideline for Tony Kelly. It is on his favourable side. He hits him off his left-hand side, but it's between the 14 and the 21-yard line. It's a Munster final. These are things you take out in your back lawn and hope they go over the bar. This is a different story.
They're turning to Tony Kelly again to rescue it from the line.
Caught. Oh my God!
Eddie Leonard puts up the white flag. Oh. The game is level.
I will never get tired of hearing that commentary from Shane McGrath and Pádraic Lodge. In Gaelic football, we've news on bans for Armagh and Galway players. And in association football, there's League of Ireland action to preview. Plus, Alan Colley and Fergal Brennan react to big signings at Spurs. And some big news for Liverpool fans as Salah stays.
Good morning, guys. I'm very happy to renew my contract with the club. And I'm very proud of that. And hopefully we'll win many trophies together.
In rugby, we'll hear from the All Blacks camp ahead of tomorrow's test in Eden Park. And in racing, Jane Mangan sets us up for the Coral Eclipse at Sandown. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Yes, hello there. It is great to have your company on this Friday evening. I'm joined live in studio by Mick Carton, former Dublin hurler, and Alan Colley, former Shelburne, Sligo, etc.
I'll be here all night, Shane. I wouldn't go there if I was you. I wouldn't go there if I was you.
Listen, Mick, you and I are going to be chatting hurling very shortly with Shane McGrath. So, Alan, I suppose, we'll be chatting football a little bit later on. But just an update on the golf. 11 under, Jorge Campillo is leading the way. Seamus Power, the best of the Irish, on 8 under. Alan, you're heading down to Kilkenny tomorrow?
I'm hoping to go down tomorrow, Shane, yeah. All going well, and I'm looking forward to it. The place looks absolutely magnificent. It's great to see Seamus Power doing so well too.
Absolutely.
Obviously, he's had such a brilliant time with it over the past 18 months, 2 years on the PGA Tour, and to see him back on home soil and playing so well. I think we need a bit of Irish interest as well to add to the weekend, and I'm not sure if Shane made the cut or how he finished up. Shane Lowry, I know he was on the brink of it there, just 3 under, so hopefully he made it as well. But to see Seamus Power so high up on the leaderboard, I think that'll really add to the interest over the weekend, and I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. I think he's just made the cut. I think 3 under was the cut, so we will see how that goes. But before we chat hurling, the conclusion of the investigation by the GAA Central Competitions Control Committee, or the CCCC, to you and I, following last weekend's unsavoury scenes at Croke Park following Armagh and Galway's clash, has concluded, and RTÉ GAA reporter Damien Lawler has an update on the report.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Yes, Shane, well, it's been a very eventful week for the GAA and its Central Competitions Control Committee. A week was spent investigating the events of last Sunday's All-Ireland quarter-final defeat to Galway. As we know, things blew up on the edge of normal time with a fracas breaking out at the tunnel. And as a result of that, Armagh's Tiernan Kelly has accepted a 6-month suspension after an incident involving Galway's Damien Comer in that game. And two more of Kelly's Armagh colleagues, Blaine Hughes and Conor Turbitt, were also identified by the committee and charged. Galway squad member Kyle Sweeney is another player facing a proposed suspension. And those three players were charged with behaving dangerously towards an opponent, and that carries a 1-match ban. After the investigation concluded, and early this morning, Armagh released a statement saying that following the investigation carried out by the CCCC, Armagh would confirm that the players and county board have accepted the proposed penalties and there will be no further comment. Both county boards were also hit with €10,000 fines. And both counties were also notified of proposed one-match bans for Sean Kelly, Aidan Nugent and Greg McCabe. Those three players were red-carded in last Sunday's game. And in Greg McCabe's case, that suspension, the proposed suspension, will now double up because he was suspended for a similar category offence earlier this year. So there you have it. A number of players called up and charged. Tiernan Kelly facing probably a lengthy and hefty ban. And Galway's Sean Kelly likely to appeal this weekend for contributing to a melee, because Galway will argue he was trying to prevent and restrain people from taking part in that melee. So a busy week overall.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Yeah, very much so. A busy week there, and unsurprising to see bans handed out. We are going to turn our attention to hurling, because Mick Carton is live in studio, former Dublin hurler, and Shane McGrath joins me on the line, former Tipperary hurler. Gentlemen, great to chat as always. Two All-Ireland hurling semi-finals coming up, and only one of the so-called big three involved. So, Michael, let us start tomorrow. Clare and Kilkenny come to Croke Park. Leinster champions Kilkenny last winning at this stage in 2019, and runners-up Munster Clare bidding to reach their first final since 2013. So despite not winning Munster, I suppose it's fair to say Clare have been the stars of the Munster Championship.
Yeah, they're flying, Shane. Great to watch them. My problem is, like, I think the ball is firmly in the Munster team's court at the moment. I thought the Munster Championship was fantastic. I thought Clare were fantastic. But I was disappointed with the Leinster Championship, to be honest with you. I thought any games I was at, they lacked intensity, they lacked atmosphere to games, especially when you're looking at the Munster games after, which were flying, and the intensity was, it couldn't have been any higher. So coming into this weekend, I can't wait for it. I hope the games live up to the billing. But I at the moment, I fancy both Munster teams at the moment, just from what's happened in the past.
Yeah. Shane McGrath, would you share those sentiments?
Yeah, I'll always take it. Someone from Leinster saying that the Munster teams are the better. that's fair enough there, Mick. Would I agree? I don't know. I just think, right, I'd say maybe one of the most talked about team of the year, Shane, has probably been Clare. But they haven't won anything. You know, they lost the Munster final, while, you know, I think it's ideal for Limerick as well that they won that Munster final, and still everybody was talking about Clare. And so Clare, like, you know, Clare, they were, I suppose, they didn't hit the standards that we saw, maybe particularly in the Munster final against Wexford. Maybe there was a bit of a kind of a hangover there from the Munster final, especially from their top players, you know. But I suppose they still got the win, and that's a good sign of the group. I just think when it comes to semi-finals, that Kilkenny, they really know how to win them, and they're comfortable being there. They have a manager that is very, very comfortable in the environment in All-Ireland semi-finals. You know, looking down through the last five times that Kilkenny and Clare met, Kilkenny have won four times. There was a draw in 2004. The last time Clare beat Kilkenny was 97. I don't know. Like, my head is kind of is torn. I'm kind of torn between Clare being a really good group and coming in with good form to Munster Championship, and Kilkenny then just knowing how to win these games. Like, if you even take the under 20 All-Ireland final, like, Limerick were coming into that, and everybody was talking about how good this Limerick team was, even though they didn't have Cathal O'Neill. And the Kilkenny team just came in and they won the All-Ireland final, because that's just what they're used to doing. They're used to winning on the big days, and it's going to be fine margins, lads. And I think if you take it, like, who has the ball the most in all the matches now? It's probably your goalkeeper and your free taker. And I just think Kilkenny have the best goalkeeper in Owen Murphy. A lot of people are saying Nicky Quaid, you know, that's an argument for another day. But I think Owen Murphy's the best goalkeeper, and I think TJ Reid is one of the best free takers. And, like, if it comes down to puck outs and frees, I think Kilkenny, I don't know, I think it's a very, very hard one to call. I really, really do, lads. I don't know how Mick feels in studio about it, but I just think this, the closer it's getting to the game and seeing what Kilkenny did down through the years, you're just going to feel that they might just have enough to do it. Like.
But just on TJ, Shane, am I being overly critical to say he's not scoring his freely from play-doh this year so far?
No, he's not. No, and, like, by the standards he has set down through the years for himself, like, as well, you know, TJ could be quiet and still score 4 or 5 points from play. I suppose he's not doing that as much. I think he's more, he's more of a provider now. He's winning primary possession. Even if you go to the Leinster final, when they really, really needed a big play, TJ Kim popped up and snapped two unbelievable balls from puckouts. Hand was turned around way for one of them against the Galway lads. And they're big plays like that TJ will give you. And I think the likes of Owen Cody, Keane Kenny, Mossy Keown, you know, even Adrian Mullen at midfield, I think they've maybe taken over the scoring duties. And, you know, they've done it well, and Kilkenny have progressed. They've won three Leinsters in a row. I agree what Mick is saying as well, though. I just think that maybe, like, the Leinster Championship, the Munster Championship was better than the Leinster Championship this year, and like the quality of games were, it was more exciting. There was a better quality of game. Like, this will be Kilkenny's first massive test. Remember now, lads, as well, like, they've lost twice this year in Championship already. They lost to Galway, they lost to Wexford when the pressure was on in Nolan Park. They won the Leinster final, but this will be a massive test for them. But I feel that they still might do it. They weren't fazed by Limerick in 2019 in the semi-final, and we'll talk about Limerick in a minute. I think they'll still use the hurt from that game to drive them on again, but I just think that Kilkenny know how to win big on the biggest days. Like,
Mick, Shane talks about their record there, and of course Kilkenny are unbeaten the last five meetings against Clare, and even Kilkenny's semi-final record under Brian Cody, 16 wins, one draw from 21 games. But he mentions the vulnerability that perhaps we've seen. They've lost twice. What is the balance like, in your opinion, between they're beatable, we've seen that already this year, but also they have that experience, they know Croke Park inside out, Brian Cody knows Croke Park inside out, and they've been there, done that at this stage numerous times before.
Yeah, like, when you look at the two teams on paper tomorrow, Shane, Clare have the better team, definitely the better team, they've hurled better. But for me, it's belief with this Clare team, because any time a team comes up against Kilkenny, especially with Cody involved, there's that doubt there that these have been through it. If it goes to a dogfight, which I think Cody will want it in tomorrow, Kilkenny normally come out the victors.
Okay.
And so I think that's the real struggle for Brian Lone's team tomorrow in Clare, that if they keep them in it and it gets down to a dogfight, I think Kilkenny will win it.
So on the scoreboard, though, it's going to be that close that it will come down to whoever, without using a cliche, whoever wants it more, if it does go into a dogfight.
Yeah, if it goes into a dogfight, you can only see it going one way. Whereas I think Clare have the players, and if they have the belief that they showed against Limerick in the two games, I know they didn't get over the line, but they hurled phenomenally. And I think if they bring that standard and that intensity to the game tomorrow, they'll win. I just think it's just going to be a question mark on what's the mindset of these Clare lads coming in tomorrow. And I think Lone has them in the right shape from watching them in the Munster hurling final. I don't think they'll take a dip tomorrow, and I think that's why I'm sort of edging towards Clare. But like as Shane said, Kilkenny just have a knack of winning these games when they have to. Like, they're not hurling great, but yet they won a third Leinster final in a row, and like they didn't hurl great this year. And I was at that Galway in Kilkenny game in Croke Park. I was so disappointed with the standard, but Kilkenny won't really mind that. Like, anytime Galway got close and they chipped back, Kilkenny just chipped on another few points and made a difference, like, of a few points when it mattered most. And they're just so used to that. So it really is a tough one to call. I'm thinking, when I look at the two teams, I'm saying Clare have to win this match, but I think Cody's the deciding factor, really, you know.
Okay, I feel I could ask him 5 minutes. I'm totally different.
I know.
It does.
As Shane said, it's so difficult.
I know. No, it is. And I suppose from a neutral perspective, that's exactly what you want to see.
Yeah.
Shane, you usually give me some good insight on matchups. Where do you feel? I know you mentioned the goalkeeper and the free taker as well, but out the park, where do you feel this may be decided?
Yeah, I think, sure, look, it comes down to, like, what are Kilkenny going to do with Tony Kelly, like, or, sorry, what are Clare going to do, you know, with him as well? But what are Kilkenny, like, are they going to, like, he's coming in averaging 11 points a game. He was quite by his own standard last test, still pops up with 3 points from play in the last 10 minutes of the game. Like, this guy, when he's quiet, is scoring 7 or 8 points. I just think, like, will they man mark him? I remember, I think it was Mikey Butler followed, it might have been maybe Cathal Mannion or someone out the field, in one of the games in Salt Hill, and it didn't really work for them. And then Mikey Butler was more, he kind of stayed more in defence, and he was like man of the match in the Leinster final. So are they going to decide that like when Tony Kelly comes into your zone, kind of like what Limerick do. I'm sure Mick might notice that as well. Like what Limerick do is with Tony Kelly, what I found in the Munster final was that it was whatever zone he came into, someone was designated to take him. So if he came into Barry, into the area where Barry Nash was, Barry Nash would pick him up. If he went a little bit further out the field, you know, you might be talking to Darragh Donovan or someone pick him up to allow Declan Hannan to kind of stay central. So like, are Kilkenny going to designate someone to follow him everywhere, or are they going to just kind of say, right, zonally, who will be the man to do it? Will it be Paddy Deegan when he's his own? You know, might it be maybe Conor Fogarty if he starts midfield, or will Killian Buckley, who's a phenomenal athlete, will he start and pick up Tony Kelly? So I think that will be very, very interesting to see who gets that job with Tony Kelly, and can they try and curb him? Like, but Wexford did to a degree, but still, Shane O'Donnell, you know, made some massive plays. Ryan Taylor made some massive plays. You know, the likes of Dave Fitzgerald, these guys, they all stepped up as well. So I think that's brilliant that Clare don't have to rely on Tony as much as they might have had in previous years. I also think inside then, I think Hugh Lawler and Peter Duggan, two man mountains, that will be a brilliant matchup. I'd love to know who's going to mark Shane O'Donnell as well with the form he's in. Again, will it be Paddy Deegan? He's been a great leader. And I suppose then at the other end, like, you know, if TJ's in full forward, him marking Conor Cleary. And I suppose a question that a lot of people are wondering is, as I'd say, it might have been a record. As bad as I might have been in Championship, Mick, you had some very, very good days now, but we were never always brilliant. Like, Rory Hayes got taken off after, I think, it was 8 minutes the last day. Like, Rory Hayes went out the following day then and played a full league match with his club, and there was no sign of injury or anything. So, will Rory Hayes start? And if he does start, will he get a job on Owen Cody, who is phenomenal? So, look, there's a few of the matchups, and I think it'll be fascinating to see who wins those battles anyway, Shane.
A few of the matchups. I think you've named 30 players there.
Can
I just ask Shane there, sorry, what would you do, Shane? Would you man mark him? Because to me in hurling, it must be very, very difficult in GAA football as well to nail down one individual, whereas obviously we see it in soccer that you may feel it might be a little bit easier.
Would I man mark him? I would, yeah. I would. I just kind of... I know the zonal thing might work for some teams because they're so disciplined, e.g. Limerick, but I just think that someone has to sacrifice their game to try and curb his influence some bit. I think he's so good, Alan, no more so, you know, the top guys in Premier League and stuff, they are going to have some massive plays anyway, and you have to just allow for that. So I think for Tony Kelly, you have to allow that he's going to get minimum 3 points from play, whatever he does from the freeze as well. But I would man mark him, and I would detail someone to have that job and just let that be their job for the whole day. Whether that frees up a bit of space inside, fair enough. But I mean, if you're stopping Tony Kelly, you know, you wouldn't be too worried about the space having inside. If I use it from a tip example, Alan, Brendan Maher got detailed to do it there a few years ago for tip in 2019. He sacrificed his game for the team and tip overturned Clare down in Ennis that day, which was a massive win for them on their way to getting to the All-Ireland. So for me, I would be saying, yeah, we have to get someone on him and follow him everywhere and just try and shut him down as much as you can.
Right, gents, we have to bounce on to the other semi-final, including Alan Colley. So in a word, I'm going to go around the table. Mick Carton, Clare, Kilkenny.
I'm going to go Clare.
Clare. Shane McGrath.
Kilkenny by 3.
Alan Colley.
Clare.
Oh, there you go. Alan Colley, the hurling expert now. Yeah,
right. I'm going in on Sunday as well. Get me involved in that.
The man that loves sports. Sunday, Limerick's fifth semi-final in a row while Galway were last here 2 years ago when they lost that one to the Treaty. Henry Shefflin will know that John Kiley and Paul Kinnerick would have been taking notes of all the weak spots in that loss to Kilkenny. However, they did rebuild and they have a bit of momentum from their quarter-final victory. What response, what sort of performance, Mick, should we expect from Henry Shefflin's Galway?
Yeah, I'm a bit worried for them tomorrow, to be honest, because after watching them against Cork, I thought they should have shipped about 5 goals from play that day. And I think Limerick were so much more clinical than Cork. And that's going to be really... that'd be playing on Henry Shefflin's mind that any time Cork ran at them, they seemed to be a goal opportunity. Mm. So I think that's going to be a massive worry. And then on the opposite side of the pitch, Galway have 8 goals from play this year so far from Championship, and 5 of them came against Laois and Westmead. So against like the so-called top-tier teams, they've got 3 goals, and one of them was a 70-yard shot that went in over goalies. So it wasn't like it went into the back of the net. So it wasn't as a well-worked goal.
Yeah.
So they're not that potent up front either. So look, Galway are a massive team. They're massively physical. I think they're going to have to bring that, but they're also going to have to get goals to beat this Limerick side. So I think that's going to be a massive worry on both sides of the pitch, and that's why I'm really worried about this Galway team now come Sunday. It's going to be a difficult ask.
Shane, Limerick aiming for a third successive final, something they last achieved in the mid-1930s and went on to a fourth successive the following year. Is this Limerick juggernaut just going to keep on rolling?
Yeah, look, I suppose the other match is, as the analogy is like Kilkenny and Clare is like a deaf dog. It's a hard one to call, but I think that this one is more clear cut. I think I can't see Limerick being bet. I think Clare, while they were phenomenal in the Munster final, they gave everything they had and they left nothing on the field. And then at the end of the match, I was there and I looked down and Keane Lynch and Peter Casey were sitting down on the bench with baseball hats on them. And I was like, imagine if those guys were on the field. And I'm hearing, like, we all know that those guys are back now. They're training well and they're in selection. Like, I think John Kiely's biggest worry at the weekend is not alone what team is he going to put out, but what is the 26 like? I just think that the array of talent they have, everybody's coming back now, everybody's in form. The competition for places is phenomenal. You talk about the likes of Cathal O'Neill mightn't even start. Like, you know, we haven't seen the best of Kyle Hayes. You know, are they going to push him back to field? I just think Limerick, and you talk about 2019, I know that they still talk about the hurt that they have from losing that day against Kilkenny, and that's 3 years ago now. And I just think since then, you know, they have not been overturned in a knockout championship game, and I don't see it any different on Sunday. I think all their best players are available. I think they love Crow Park. I think they know how to win there, and I don't think Galway have it in the locker, and I just don't think they've performed as a whole unit. And I agree with Mick, they could have shipped 4 or 5 goals against Cork if Limerick get those chances. You know, they're on a different wavelength, Shane. We're all playing catch up with them, and I just cannot see anything but a Limerick victory on Sunday. And if I'm wrong, so be it, but I think they're a serious group. Like,
okay, I would love to stay in chat hurling all evening long, but unfortunately time is against us. Shane McGrath has called it there. Limerick, Mick.
Yeah, Limerick as
Limerick.
Well.
Limerick. Yeah, Alan Colley.
Oh, Limerick, without a shadow of a doubt, and I'll be there cheering them on.
I won't ask you the tactical dimensions, the middle third, of what John Kiely might be
busy
about.
Weekend, Shane.
And foot for the minor, lads.
Yes. No, listen, Shane McGrath, I just want to end our hurling conversation on the minor, because, of course, that does feature a certain Tipperary and, indeed, Offaly down in Kilkenny. Shane McGrath, how do you see this one going?
Look, it'll be a great game. It will, Shane. It's going to be a full house. Really look forward to getting down there as well. My own brother's involved in the management team. He's coaching the team. Look, lads, this Tip and Offaly team, they actually played in the what's called the Tony Forrestal Under-14 tournament 3 years ago. So this Offaly team have been talked about for a while. They're coming and they're a really good group. Tip are coming in undefeated. Offaly are coming in undefeated. I think they're the two best minor teams in the country. There is going to be a phenomenal Offaly support there. I really hope there's the same for the Tip boys. We have some great talent coming through in Tip. Tom Delaney, Paddy McCormack up front, Damien Corbett. We've great guys in the back as well. From the lesser hurling clubs, the likes of Carrick Swans and Feathered and Ballylooby and these places. And I think they're a great group. They're very, very similar to the way James Woodlock hurled himself. Very honest, love playing for Tip. The Offaly group, managed by Limerick man Leo O'Connor. Some great talent there. Killian Martin, Dan Ravenhill, Adam Screeny and James Mahon. They're all names for the future, lads. There's going to be a phenomenal atmosphere there. I think after the way Tip overturned Galway, a really fancy Galway team in the semi-final, they're getting better every week, and I really, really hope that they'll do the business, and you know that these 15, 16 and 17 year old guys won't be fazed by the 26,000-27,000 people that will be there. So I'm with my head and my heart, I'm going for a Tipperary win on Sunday in Nolan Park in the minor final.
You were never going to call it against Tip, Shane, let's be honest.
Absolutely not.
No, listen, it should be an absolute belter of an atmosphere. Tip Offaly in the minor final on Sunday, and indeed two big semi-finals in the senior grade as well over the weekend, of which you can see live on RT television. Shane McGrath, Mick Carton, thank you very much. Alan Colley, you'll be sticking around because we're going to be chatting football in a few moments time here in Game On.
RTE 2FM.
QFM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game On.
Football.
Now you're very welcome back to Game on this Friday evening. Alan Colley is still live in studio. Fergal Brennan will be joining us very shortly. But Alan, we are going to start with League of Ireland this evening. And there are 4 games in the Premier Division. Bowes welcomed Derry City to Dalymount, Dundalk hosts UCD, and it is Pats versus Drogheda in Inchicore, and the 8 p.m. kickoff. Those all kick off at 7:45, and 8 p.m. it's Finn Harps versus Shamrock Rovers, and in the First Division it's Bray, Cork, Cove, Treaty, Galway, Waterford, Wexford, Athlone. So,
Alan Colley, Shamrock Rovers up in Donegal. Narrow wins over Dublin rivals Bows and Pats secured the hoops we're seeing off. Not teams which are likely to challenge them at the head of the table, but some of their most difficult games they face in a regular series. 10 points clear of Dundalk and one further clear of Derry City. Even with balancing Europe, the league trophy, it's gone to Talla, isn't it?
You would think so, Shane, yeah. A couple of weeks back there, obviously when Dundalk beat Shamrock Rovers, we were hoping that we would be in for a tense title race, but you look at the past kind of 7 days and they've obviously extended that lead at the top again, with Dundalk slipping up last week against Shelburne, and as you said, the two big Dublin derbies over the weekend, beating Bohemians, which was a massive result. I was at that game last Friday, and then I was in Inchicore on Monday watching them against St. Pat's as well. And the worrying thing, Shane, despite Bowes being in the game, particularly in the first half, I felt Bowes were very good and dangerous without causing too much trouble, but they looked dangerous on the counter-attack, but they had no real clear-cut chances. And something similar with Pats on Monday night, that they were in the game and they were huffing and puffing without any clear-cut chances, yet Shamrock Rovers were still able to just keep them at arm's length. And obviously when the chances arose for them, they were clinical and took them, as we've seen last week, and obviously Monday night with Aaron Green getting a great goal as well, the second one to finish them off. So it's almost like they're winning in third and fourth gear as well. And when you factor in that there was no Jack Byrne, no Mandriau, no Burke, no Richie Towell, the four marquee players in the league, you could say, Shane.
That's scary.
Yeah, it actually is. And everybody spoke about how good the squad is at Shamrock Rovers. They've had to use it, obviously, over the last number of weeks with those injuries, but that just goes to show just how strong it is, that when you're missing those four players and you're still coming up trumps and getting your 6 points out of six over a busy weekend like last weekend. You're right when you say about, obviously, July coming up with the European games. Dundalk have no European distraction, which may help them if we are to have a race, but 10 points at the moment. I know Dundalk have two games in hand. It's hard to look past the title going anywhere but Talla, Shane.
Very much so. Dundalk host UCD, and you'd be expectant of a Dundalk win. However, I said that last time, it ended up 2-2 in the Belfield Bowl. You're off to Dalymount Park. Third place Derry are facing sixth place Bows. Bows have signed a couple of new players, as have a few other teams, but they won't be available this evening because of an FAI rule. It has to be 24 hours after the window opens, which is today, before they can play. So Sligo Rovers welcome Shells tomorrow. I think their new signings can play, which is bad news for any Shelburne fans listening in. As I say in an impartial journalistic voice, Bowes Derry. Will Derry defeat Bowes, keep the pressure on Rovers somewhat, or can Bowes win at home?
Oh, it's tight to call this, Shane, because as I say, I watched Bowes last week and I've seen a lot of Bowes, and I still think there's the makings of a really good team with Bohemians. You mentioned a couple of signings that they've made. You would like to think they will make a big difference. And as we've said all through the season, bar obviously from second down to, you could go down to nearly Shelburne in seventh, really, Shane, like there's not much between the teams at all. And if those couple of additions that are coming in make the difference for Bohemians, I'd like to think that will push them up the table to back into those European positions. So it's a tough game to call. Derry, obviously, we all thought we're going to challenge Shamrock Rovers, and it was looking like that for the first 10, 11 weeks of the season. But you look at their last 8 or 9 games, it's been a disaster for them. Although they got back to winning ways last week against UCD with a penalty from Will Patching. So hopefully that maybe has turned the corner from them and we'll see a bit more like what we saw in the early part of the season from Derry City. But it is, I'm heading over to Dalymount after this, and it's a tough one to call. I would kind of edge towards Bohemians on the good first half that I saw last week. But the problem with Bohemians is they've been so inconsistent, not just in games, but even in kind of 45 minute spells as well, Shane. You could have a good first half and a patchy second half. They've yet to put a 90 minute performance together, and they found it very difficult to even get a victory and followed up with a back to back victory. They've been so inconsistent. So if they can sort that out, I think that there's the potential to get a victory tonight.
Okay, and in a word, literally a word, because we do have to get on to transfer news, the Tim Clancy derby, Pat Strada, who's going to come out on top?
I'm good friends with Kevin Doherty, so you're putting me on the spot here. Andrade have been going very well, to be fair, and I watched Pats on Monday night, and they've been very inconsistent up and down as well. They need a victory. The fans were getting on Tim's case on Monday night as well. Sorry, you said in a word, I'm going to go Drogheda.
Okay, that's just because you're mates with Kev. It's hard overhead. Okay, just to wrap up our League of Ireland discussion, Johnny McDonald has stepped aside as director of coaching at Belvedere after 5 years. Great servant to the League of Ireland, so just a note to wish Johnny all the best in future endeavours. Speaking of transfer news, St Patrick's athletic young 19-year-old goalkeeper Josh Keely has signed with Spurs, so the very best of luck to Josh. However, I want to start with the news, and I'll bring Fergal Brennan into the conversation, that Mo Salah has signed a new 3-year contract which will keep him at Liverpool until 2025. The Egypt international had entered the final year of his existing deal. Negotiations over extending his stay had been taking place for most of last season, but Fergal, it is finally over the line, and I'm sure it is music to the ears of many Liverpool fans.
It is indeed. Myself, who was due to finish at 4 or 4.30, it wasn't news to my ears when it dropped, and had to stay on and do a bit of extra work. But yeah, that's one of the perils of press releases coming out late in the day. This has saved a lot of anxiety for Liverpool fans for the next few weeks building into the new season. Obviously, Sadio Mane moving on. The two situations were compared. They were both going into the final year of their contract, as you say. Mane's gone to Bayern Munich, and now Mo Salah is staying at Liverpool, signed until 2025. And I think given all the variables that are floating around with Salah, his demands, Liverpool's situation of wanting to not completely throw their wage structure in the bin just to retain him, I think this is probably the best outcome for all concerned. Salah's not got quite the wages that he was probably pushing for. I think the reports are coming in at about $375,000 a week, which is a bit under what he was originally going for. Goal bonuses, assist bonuses, that kind of thing thrown in on top of it. Liverpool save a little bit of face because they've not gone completely with what him and his agent were demanding. But all in all, from a football in sense, this is huge for Liverpool. Obviously, they've strengthened bringing in Darwin Nunez, but Sadio Mane is a big player to miss in terms of his input for the team and his role in and around the squad. And Mohamed Salah, in a different way, I think if he'd gone or the season had kicked off and he hadn't extended his contract, that's a distraction that the Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp don't need. They want to be chasing Manchester City all the way, and they know that from the first ball that's kicked in August, that starts right from there. They can't afford to start slowly and be playing catch-up. And when you've got someone like Salah firing on all cylinders, Liverpool fans will tell you that he's not been his incredible self probably in the last 6 months or so. If he can put all of this behind him and get back to flying down the wing and banging in goals for Liverpool, he's one of the best players on the planet. So if all the pieces of the jigsaw do fit together, Liverpool are going to be some force.
Absolutely. So good news for Liverpool fans and good news for Spurs fans as well, Alan Colley, because Richarlison has signed for a reported £60 million, as well as Josh Keighley, the young Spurs, or the young Pat's goalkeeper as well. He might learn from new goalkeeper Fraser Forster. Perisic, Bissouma also over the line for Spurs, and they've been linked with Clement Longley as well, the centre-half and loan from Barcelona. Is Richarlison worth £60 million, Alan?
Who's worth the money that they pay nowadays, Shane? To be honest, you could debate it on every transfer. That's just the world we live in nowadays. But I think in terms of the football side, I think it's a really good signing. Richarlison always strikes me, and Fergal obviously probably watches him a lot more than I do up close and personal at Goodison, but he always strikes me as a real angry, frustrated individual, whereas I think in a better team with better players, I think that'll bring the best out in him. I always found that, obviously, through Everton's struggles, that he looked like a really kind of frustrated figure throughout all that. And I think with Conte as well, you know my feelings on Conte, Shane. I think he's fantastic. Spurs are absolutely blessed to have him. And I love the fact that now that they have him, they're obviously backing him as well in the transfer market, which is what is needed. And I think the signing of Perisic, Bissouma and now Richarlison is brilliant business, because I know Kane and Son are amazing. Everybody loves Kane and Son. They're phenomenal players, but they can't keep doing it week in, week out when you think of the amount of games that they'll play next year with the Champions League and everything. And it is a squad game. We see that now with all the top teams, Liverpool, Man City. If you're firing on all fronts, you obviously need backup. So I think the signing of Richarlison, Kulusevski, Son, Kane, you look at the options they have now, midfield and up front. I still think they need to get a centre half, and I think they probably will, but I think the business that Conte is doing is absolutely fantastic, Shane.
Yeah, well, that centre half could come in the form of Clement Longley, as I say, being linked from Barcelona on a loan move, I believe. Fergal, as Alan said there, you would have seen Richarlison up close and personal, so it's the perfect evening to have you on when there's a big Liverpool re-signing and indeed a move from Everton as well. Will he flirt at Tottenham under Antonio Conte?
I wouldn't be as confident as Alan about that. I would agree this idea that he is quite an angry individual, and I think particularly based on the last season at Everton, he had every reason to be. They were struggling, they were down the bottom of the table, and he did, in fairness to him, lead the fight for them. Some of his stats for Everton last season in an attacking sense were okay without being fantastic, but in a defensive position as an attacker, he was really impressive. Tackles being worn, attacking pressures, he's amongst the top for forward players in the Premier League last season. What you have to ask yourself is, can that then be converted to a team that are in the Champions League? They want to consolidate their position as a Champions League qualifier, maybe be a dark horse to put a bit of pressure on Liverpool and Manchester City. I would have some doubts about whether Richarlison can push them on that bit more, particularly when you look at Son, Kane and Dejan Kulusevski, who I thought was excellent for them in the back end of last season. I think he is a good player. Whether he's any more than that remains to be seen. Alan's dead right, this idea of the fees that get thrown around. Is anyone worth anything? We can't really, you know, make those judgments. But he has gone for big money so far in his career. It was 35 to take him from Watford to Everton, rising to 50. This is, I think, 50 rising to 60. So it's a lot of money for a player who has never played European football, Europa League or Champions League football in his career. And he is unproven, not just at the highest level, but he's unproven as a top half Premier League player. And I don't want to be disingenuous to him, but I was just looking at some of his numbers from last season. He got 10 goals and 5 Premier League assists. Timo Pukki got 11 and 3 assists, and Norwich got relegated. Now, he's better than Timo Pukki, but I do look at him and I think, yes, he's a good player. Yes, he leads from the front, and Conte likes that kind of fighting spirit. But I don't get the sense with him that he's a Danny Ings or even a Dominic Calvert-Lewin or a Wilf Zaha of a player mid-table, maybe lower mid-table, that makes a massive difference for that side. Maybe I'm going to be wrong. Maybe we'll go to Tottenham and tear it up. But Tottenham are a really, really talented team that look to be going places. And Richarlison, I just think there's still a question mark around him. And particularly, as Alan rightly said, because he is so angry, can he convert that into something productive every single week? Because that's what you need to do for a team like Tottenham.
Absolutely. Well, it will be interesting to see who will be the best of the rest, I suppose, because Man United linked with a host of players. Chelsea, of course, Raheem Sterling, Rafinha, and indeed Arsenal look to have signed Gabriel Jesus as well. And just to mention, unfortunately, Alan, we're out of time for our football chat, but Shane Long leaving Southampton following the conclusion of his contract, a great servant to Southampton and indeed the Premier League. And if you only have to look on Twitter at the replies to Southampton's tweet of, is the statue going to be built? And there's a lot of goat emojis and everything else. So well done to Shane Long. Will be interesting to see where he goes. As I say, Shin A for football, Shin A for Fergal Brennan and Alan Colley. Gentlemen, thank you both very much. We're going to be turning our attention to horse racing very shortly and golf after the break. But just to remind our listeners, Damien O'Mara will be here live on 2FM from 8 a.m. tomorrow as Michael Corcoran, Donal Lenihan and Isaac Boss bring you commentary and analysis from Eden Park of Ireland versus New Zealand. Meanwhile, that will be tomorrow. So yeah, so it is going to be a great match to look forward to, and hopefully Ireland can come away with a more of a positive result than they did against the Maoris. But as I say, golf is next with Greg Allen.
RTE 2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on.
Golf.
Now, we turn our attention to golf, and I'm delighted to say that Greg Allen joins us live from Kilkenny as he can round up the conclusion of day two for us. Greg.
Yeah, it's been a brilliant final hour of action. And inside the last hour, just about half an hour ago, we saw on the 18th green, it's a really difficult par four. It's 480 yards, water all the way down the left-hand side. It's been the scene of many famous victory celebrations, one of which was Tiger Woods back in 2002, 20 years ago in the WGC. I'm not sure there was a bigger roar back then than there was just about half an hour ago, because both Seamus Power and Shane Lowry hold birdie putts on that green. They had very different agendas, but both putts got roars, which really lifted the roof of the stand behind them. And there's good reason for that. Firstly, to Seamus Power, because he's right in contention here. He's tied for fourth place. That putt for birdie rounded off a round of 68, and it also made up for a bogey in the 16th that he made from the side of the green, only a 9-iron in his hand going into that green. He felt pretty bad about that, then failed to bogey the fairly easy par 5, 17th, but made that bogey on the tough par 4 18. So around a 68, Seamus Power is only three shots off the leader. And that leader is Jorge Campillo of Spain, who is actually one shot out of the playoff 4 years ago in the Irish Open at Ballyliffin. Just one shot out of a playoff with a $1 million prize for the winner back then, and that was Russell Knox. So he's played in good well in Irish Opens before. And Campillo on 11 under leads by one from Poland's Adrian Mronk and Paraguay's Fabrizio Zanotti, and then comes Power in the group, tied for fourth place on 800, bang in contention.
That was amazing. You know, you just felt like the whole country seemed to be wheeling your ball into the hole on the last few holes. So it was great. You know, obviously, like, you kind of feeding off the atmosphere with Shane making some putts at the end. So it was a lot of fun out there, and it was nice to get that one last.
So you're in contention, right in contention, 800 par, 3 off the lead, inside, well inside the top 10, top 5-ish. How do you feel about this position and what you've experienced over these 2 days with this crowd really rooting for you?
Yeah, to be honest, it's been amazing. You know, it's the first time I've played with big crowds with that much support. You know, you play in big crowds, obviously, in big tournaments, but, you know, they're usually waiting for whoever, like someone coming up behind you, some big name guy. So it's amazing. Like I said, I feel very comfortable out there. It's just nice seeing familiar faces. And yeah, and obviously making some putts as well, which is always great to get the crowd going. So it's been a very, very fun couple of days.
You've won on the PGA Tour. You know what it's like to be in contention number of times. This is the Irish Open. You're right in contention. And you're going to have a lot this weekend that you've never experienced before with a big crowd. A 20,000 crowd is going to be here. Are you getting your head around that yet?
No, I probably won't. And I'm kind of getting used to their last couple of days, but, you know, I'd say tomorrow I'll probably learn a bit more. But it's something I'm really looking forward to. I said it's so unique, like, I've never had crowds like that, kind of, you know, having that much support out there. So it was amazing. Like, so I said, really looking forward to it. We'll see how it handled, obviously, going into the weekend. But no, I feel very comfortable, and I like really like the speed and roll of the greens. So that's always gives you a little bit of confidence deep down.
Really well done today.
Thank you very much, Greg. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that was Seamus Power speaking to me just off the 18th green just about half an hour ago. But also speaking to me was Shane Lowry. Now, he had a very different agenda, as I said, to Power, because Lowry was battling to make the cut, and the cut was going to fall, and it's still not sure that it's going to fall at 2 under or 3 under. 3 under was the mark when he stood over a 20-foot putt. He had birdied the previous three holes, 15, 16 and 17, and then that 20-footer went in, and the roar was such that Lowry said it brought him back to Whistling Straits, the Ryder Cup, and that famous victory he had alongside Tyrrell Hatton, who was actually playing with him today.
I felt like 18 green in Whistling Straits for some strange reason, but I don't know why I got so excited. Well, obviously I do, because, you know, I want to be here the weekend. I was disappointed coming down the last few holes. I just felt like I couldn't get anything going. But today and on the back nine, I definitely felt like I found something in my putting, in my game, that I was happy, not happy missing the cup, but I was happier. I would have been happier leaving here today, because I felt like I found something. So I'm optimistic for the weekend. I know I need to go and shoot two low scores to have a good week, but you can do that. Like, I know Leon Seamus was he lying tied fourth or fifth now, and, you know, he's only five ahead of me. So if I can go out and post a low one in the morning, then you never know. You just never know, really.
Have you ever played four holes of golf in a second round? Because that crowd was rooting for you, and they felt the building of the possibility coming up just to make the cut.
Even when my second shot landed on 18, there was a big roar, like, and it was only 20 feet. Like, it wasn't like it was close, but it's probably better that it was 20 feet. It was good fun. Look, Seamus was out there, and I was sort of playing second fiddle to him. He was rolling putts in, and the crowd were getting behind him. And, you know, I felt a little flat for a long time, but, you know, as soon as I started making a couple of putts, the crowd helped me along the way coming down the last few holes. And it was just, look, that's why we love this tournament. That's why we love this country, you know, moments like that.
Yeah, Shane Lowry, delighted to make the cut at 3 under par. That'll make it for sure. Patrick Harrington was 2 shots outside of that projected cut mark when he birdied the final two holes to shoot a round of 71, and he will make the cut bang on 3 under par. But again, making cuts, there was a lot of nervy moments for him.
This is why I like being on the Champions Tour. There is no cut. I was playing nicely. I was well in the tournament. I was 4 under and should have been more. Not even contemplate the cut, and I wasn't contemplating the cut really at all the way through, onto a double bogey to 7th hole from nowhere. And that's kind of the way golf is. If you don't get if you got to the 7 or 8 under par, you'd be relaxed and push on. If you hang around that 4 under par and you're thinking the cut is going to be 3 or 4, all of a sudden you're very much conscious of it, and you get a little bit more conservative and a little bit more cautious, until, as I did, I was outside the cut line, and then you just go all out at it. I hit two lovely drivers up the 8th hole that was nearly close to pin high, which two good hits to get up and down. Then I hold about a 12 footer, and then on the last I hold about an 18 footer for birdie.
So there's no let up in your desire to play at the weekend, even though you are tired from your US Seniors Open win, and you want to be around, and the crowds the weekend, you've sampled them today and yesterday
it's going to be quite a weekend to be around for.
Oh, absolutely. Look, if this was a regular event, well, I wouldn't have been here if it was a regular event. After winning last week, I would have taken the week off. But it's an Irish Open, and having enjoyed the crowds for the first 2 days, as tired as I am, and maybe it'd be quite miserable being out so early in the morning and all that goes with it, I'll certainly enjoy the fans that do turn out. They've been incredibly supportive, and you know, it's something that you always enjoy. You miss somewhat, so it's good to have it.
So Harrington is 71, 3 under par. Lowry around of 70, and he's in on 3 under par. That will definitely make the cut. Seamus Power just 3 off the lead on 8 under par. It's not a bad Irish Open at the moment, for the Irish, that is. At the moment, Niall Carney, who so badly needs to make a few bob on the order of merit to have a hope of regaining a card, he at the moment is 2 under par. He bogeyed the last, around a 74. 2 under par is currently tied for 65th place. There are still players on the course. 65 players and ties make it for the weekend. So a nervy half an hour or so for Niall Carney. It would be huge for him with the money on offer this week, 5.7 million, if he could make the cut and make maybe a five-figure check and advance his chances of making the possibility of getting a European Tour card for next season, a DP World Tour card for next season. But Jorge Campillo of Spain leads on 11 under par, one clear of Adrian Maronk and Fabrizio Zanotti, both on 10 under par. And then the leading Irishman, Seamus Power, on 8 under, Lowry and Harrington on 3 under, and hopefully Niall Carney would be around for the weekend on 2 under.
Greg Allen, thank you very much. You can hear Greg Allen's updates across RT Radio over the weekend. You can watch live coverage of the Irish Open on RT Television. But moving on to horse racing, and I'm delighted to say Jane Mangan joins us live now, because Jane, Classic Heroes, Vadaney and Native Trail are among six runners declared for a fascinating renewal of the Coral Eclipse at Sandown tomorrow, and you have all of the details for us as always, Jane.
Yes, Shane, it's only six runner field, but it's a really deep race. The Coral Eclipse has had some vintage renewals in the past, but I think this is right up there with the best of them. You mentioned Vadaney. The Aga Khan hasn't actually had a winner in his colours in the UK since Harzand won the 2016 Epsom Derby. It's been a while for him, but Vadaney looked really good in the Prix de Jockey Club, and he actually had to be supplemented for the race. He didn't actually feature amongst the initial entries, but his French trainer, Jean-Claude Rouget, feels that this is the right race for him, and he's top of the market, which is surprising because Native Trail has looked awesome. He was last year's champion juvenile. He won the Irish Guineas. The fans at the Curragh got to see him there after he got beaten by his stablemate Caribus in Newmarket. Throw in the older horses, Bay Bridge, who was beaten, of course, by State of Rest at Royal Ascot. Alan Kerr, fresh from his Tattersalls Gold Cup win at the Curragh, and a pair of John and Teddy Gosden horses, Mishriff, last year's winner, and Lord North, who is well beaten at Ascot. The two of them bring up the rest of the field. But it's the first time, Shane, this year where we're going to see the classic generation, the three-year-olds, take on the older horses. And let's see if they stack up.
OK, well, it will be interesting to see if they stack up. But who are you going with?
I'm going Vadaney, because I think the way in which he won the Prix de Jockey Club proved that this is his ideal trip. He's got loads of pace. Native Trail has been very good over a mile. This is his first time up to 10 furlongs, and let's see if that suits him. It looks like it will. He'll probably hit his usual flat spot, but I think he'll have to be better than what we saw at the Curra if he's going to turn over the French contender. And the older horses are solid, but they're not exactly Bailly. They're not the best of what's around. I think the best of the rest is probably Alan Kerr, because Mishriff has looked maybe a shadow of his former self in his last couple of runs. He's a five-year-old now. He's hardly getting better. And I suppose a lot of people will be drawn to the fact that James Doyle rides Lord North. He was riding for John and Teddy Gosden last week as well. And we're all adding up 2 and 2 and getting 15. But, you know, in the absence of Frankie Dettori, they've reached for James Doyle on a number of occasions and are doing so again tomorrow.
Well, speaking of the absence of Frankie Dettori, he had been penciled in to ride dual Group 2 winner Real World, but unfortunate news that Real World will be missing out.
Yeah, he's missing out, and interestingly enough as well, Saeed Bin Sarour mentioned that he had a cough during the week. Aidan O'Brien had three contenders in here, including Stone Age. Stone Age actually bypasses this in preference for the Belmont Derby next week, and I think Godolphin are sending a number of horses to North America and Canada next week as well, where Frankie Dettori will likely take up rides for Charlie Appleby and Saeed Bin Sarour. So Frankie isn't going to be getting any kind of a rest. He's in action in the German Derby along with Holly Doyle on Sunday in Hamburg. So Frankie Dettori, his services will be in demand. I wouldn't be worried about him.
Okay. Well, does anything else catch your eye from Sandown over the weekend or indeed elsewhere going forward, Jane?
Yes, it's a jam-packed time of year. I'm at Nace tomorrow for a really good eight-race card. I'm looking forward to being there for Racing TV. And the July meeting at Newmarket next week, the Falmouth Stakes, we mentioned Frankie Dettori. Will he be aboard in Spiral, the Coronation Stakes winner, last year's best two-year-old filly for John and Katie Gosden and Cheveley Park? She's unbeaten. Frankie Dettori is unbeaten on her. Will he ride her? That is the big question. Another question, will Homeless Songs take her on in the Falmouth Stakes? I'd love if Dermot Weld unleashed her again, because she looked awesome in the Irish 1000 Guineas. We haven't seen her since because the ground at Royal Ascot was too quick. Throw in the July Cup next week as well, the Sprinters, where the three-year-old Perfect Power will likely take on Artorias from Australia, who has stayed down here after finishing third in the Platinum Jubilee at Ascot. And Creative Force, the Platinum Jubilee winner, likely to run there as well. So the July meeting at Newmarket is always a treat. It's summertime, quick ground, good flat horses. But it's only a month to Galway, and that's where a lot of people will be making their plans. I'm at Nace tomorrow. A lot of horses were running at Tipperary last night with a view to the Galway Plate, Galway Hurdle. I can already feel that Ballybrit. 2 years of no crowds, already building momentum.
It's going to be wild. Jane Mangan, so much to look forward to in the world of horse racing. Thank you very much. That is all we have time for on this evening's Game On. Don't forget, we have live commentary of Ireland versus New Zealand here on 2FM from 8am. But from all of the Game On team, it is bye for now. But do stay tuned to 2FM, because Blatna Tracy's up next with the official chart show. Shalom.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.